Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
It's a five stair steps. Baby Make Me Feel So Good on Curtum in 1969. Got to number 12 on the R&B charts, bubbled under on the pop charts. But today would have been Clarence Burke Jr.'s 71st birthday. He died in 2013 at 62 years old. Of course, the five stair steps were the Burke family out of Chicago, Curtis Mayfield's discovery, and he wrote that one. I'm Raleigh James. I'm in for G, and we are talking Memorial Day, obviously, and I want you to meet in moments here Captain Trahan. Not only is he a decorated combat pilot, he spent 32 years flying for Delta, and he's a published author. In fact, you can go to Amazon.com and just look for Mike Trahan, T-R-A-H-A-N, as an author, and you'll see it all. Captain Trahan, thanks for joining us.
Raleigh, hi. Greetings from Texas.
Yes, yes, perfect. And especially for someone who was flying for Delta, most people think of it as Atlanta-based, but originally wasn't it Texas-based?
Delta actually started in Monroe, Louisiana as a crop dusting outfit.
Yeah.
And we had bases in Texas and all over, but I stopped in Chicago a few times and got some of those good Chicago hot dogs and yogurt at the airport there. Anyway, it's good to talk with you. Appreciate the invite.
Oh, absolutely. Now, first thing that really got to me was you flew Spooky, the gunship. So tell me all about Spooky.
Okay. Back in 1964, the Air Force sent a captain over to Vietnam to find out what was most needed. And when he came back, he said what is most needed is an airplane that can loiter and stay over a target for long periods of time to provide night close air support, because the Viet Cong would attack at night. And if the fighters came in, they would, you know, they would strafe and bomb, and then they'd be gone, and then they'd attack again. So this Captain Terry came up with the idea of getting an old World War II airplane, a C-47 or DC-3, as we used to know them in the airlines, and put some minigun machine guns out the left side and develop the technique of side-firing gunnery, where you just go over a target and set up a 30-degree bank left turn, put your sight pipper right on the target, and you could hold that throughout the turn, pretty much, if the wind wasn't too strong. And we could provide night close air support. The minigun would fire 6,000 rounds a minute each gun. We had three guns, or we could slow them down to 3,000 rounds a minute. And the way we lit the target was we used flares on parachute, phosphorus flares. They were 2 million candle power, I think. I'll tell you more about the crew setup as you ask.
Yeah. No, that's ingenious all the way around, because normally you think about hovering over a target, you figure you're going to be in a chopper, not anything fixed wing. And
yes,
to come up with that is just mind-boggling to me. You know, it's easy to say it once it's been done and once you've done it, but the guy who first thought of it, that's alarmingly interesting to me.
It really is. And to come up with the idea of, you know, doing it at night, that was the best thing, because that was our kind of our protection too.
Right.
We were flying only at 3,000 feet and about 120 miles an hour in a circle. And anybody that's a duck hunter knows if a duck circles the pond enough times, you're going to figure out how to shoot him down. But at night, they couldn't see us that well through the light from the flares and from the noise and all that and the smoke. And if they started getting close to us, I would take the engines and put them out of synchronization, the propellers.
Yeah.
And they would make a warbling sound, and they couldn't figure out where we were by sound either. So anyway, they used that AC-47 for 5 years, I think from 65 yeah. to 70, or actually December of 69.
Yeah.
As luck would have it, I flew one of the last two missions in Vietnam. I flew the second to the last mission that we flew in that gunship in Vietnam in 1969. And we gave the gunship program, the AC-47 program, over to the South Vietnam Air Force because they had developed another airplane, the AC-130, which carried bigger guns and better equipment and all that, and they could do the job better. And they're still doing that to this day, flying the AC-130s. And it's a magnificent close air support. One of the records I'm proudest of, Raleigh, is that we never lost an outpost that we came in to defend.
Oh, that's great.
So it was really, and I'll have to tell you, I was flying when I got my assignment to go to Vietnam. I was flying the C-141, which was the most modern four-engine jet transport in the Air Force. I got that assignment right out of pilot training.
Right, the Starlifter.
Yeah, that's right. You know the 141. Okay. Mm. And I got my assignment, and I was hoping for a fighter. I'd passed up fighters, and I said, yeah, I made a mistake. That's the only place in the world I could fly fighters was in the Air Force.
Right.
And I passed it up. So I said, well, give me a fighter. Let's go. You know, and I said, no. We've got you in the transport category now, so you're going to get this. And so I said, well, at least give me something where I can shoot back, because
right.
I'd been going in and out of Vietnam for a couple of years, getting shot at every time I went in the 141. And so anyway, I went from the most modern airplane to the oldest in the fleet. I mean, it was the oldest airplane in the Air Force. The C-47 been around since the late 30s. And
that's great.
Well, it was embarrassing. You know, I said, how humiliating.
No.
But, Raleigh, after I got into the mission, I found out what it was, that our job was to defend our troops and our allies' troops over there and to get them home. And so after I got over the shock of the greeting I got when I got home from Vietnam, I ran into some squadron mates, and they said, Mike, you've never really considered what we did over there, have you? I said, no, I came home and just forgot about it, because nobody appreciated it in 1970.
Yeah.
And so they said, well, what you did was save lives over there. And so I started wearing our call sign was Spooky, and we've got a little hat with a little ghost on it, our little Spooky emblem. And I wear that everywhere I go now. And and I can't tell you how many times I've met people, Raleigh, that say, oh, Spooky. You flew Spooky? I said, yeah. He said, man, you saved me one night. And I've heard that thousands of times since I've been home, and that made it all worthwhile.
Oh, yeah, that's worth everything. But, yes, it was a horrible time to come home in 1970, just disgraceful. Now, on top of that, you wanted to be a commercial pilot, and that also, 1970, as I recall, wasn't. I think Delta was the only major who was hiring then.
Actually, Delta and PSA, and I got hired by both Pacific Southwest Airlines.
Oh yes,
in
yes.
California.
Know them well. The smile planes, the 727s with the smile.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I was fortunate. When I got home from Vietnam, I had 6 months left on my tour of duty. But the Air Force said, well, we can't train you and get you on the line again in 6 months, so we'll just give you an early out. And I got hired in July by Delta, and that Raleigh, that was the last class hired by any airline for 27 months. So I just snuck right in the bottom of it. But it was a great career. I got to stay in the same uniform all 32 years with Delta. You know, no mergers, no furloughs or anything for me. And it worked out good.
No, Delta wound up eating everybody else. A couple of years after you were there, they acquired Northeast. And but when you were there, I remember 1970, Delta was bragging that they had an all-jet fleet. Were they all DC-9s?
Oh, no. 1970, we had my favorite airplane was the one I started out in, was the Convair 880.
Okay.
It was a very impractical airplane. It carried 95 people and burned fuel like crazy.
Yeah.
It had, you're familiar with the B-58 Hustler bomber, the airplane, supersonic bomber?
Uh-huh.
Well, the Convair 880 was built by the same company, and they had the same engines. I can't remember the designation of the engine now, but they had the same engines that the B-58 Hustler had, except no afterburners.
Right.
But that airplane was fastest. It was unbelievable. We did have DC-9s and DC-8s were our jet fleet back then. And then after the Northeast merger came the 727.
Right.
I spent 60 years of my career on that great airplane.
Wow. All right. Yeah. And by the time you were on it, they had refined it. I know when it first started out in the early 60s, they had trouble with those 7.2s, especially those hairline fractures in the tails on takeoff. So I remember all those stories. And then they became an absolute workhorse. And, you know, like I say, here's Delta. They're never actually being acquired by anybody, but they're eating the world. They bought Western. And eventually, I guess, the remnants of Pan Am, which included National.
Yeah, they absorbed some of the Pan Am National pilots, yes.
Right.
And before that, Delta merged with CNS Airlines with Chicago and Southern.
Right.
I don't know if you remember that. Or
I do.
Heard that.
And,
yeah.
And that gave them a lot of route that way. Because, you know, we're also talking a point earlier on, before deregulation, where these routes were absolutely regulated.
Oh, yeah.
And, the other thing, of course, is that when you go back to commercial airlines in the beginning, you're also talking about a lot of their revenue, they're hauling mail. So here you are, you're you know, not even a decade in, deregulation hits, and of course there's all sorts of good things about that, but all sorts of questions as well. And I've wondered to this day, as more and more people clamor for the cheaper and cheaper tickets, is it even viable to run airlines today?
Well, I'm beginning to wonder that. Somehow they managed to do it. You know, you're talking about me getting in by the skin of my teeth. Well, what that did was put me at the tail end of the seniority list. I was 15 from the bottom of the seniority list for 27 months, Raleigh.
Oh,
I flew, basically, I would go out and fly twice a month just to keep my currency. But all that meant a delay in my career. It took me 7.5 years to get off the engineer's seat. Flight engineer, and then 8.5 years to get off the co-pilot seat, and then my last 15 and a half as captain.
Right.
It was a good career, though. But
it was a great career. And, I mean, you saw such changes, because 1970 airlines still, it didn't have the glamour of the 50s and the sleeper berths, but still, it was a fairly glamorous deal comparatively when you got there. And when you left, it was the bus of the air. You know, it's like, well, we'll throw you a can of tuna mid-flight. I can't imagine going through that and watching that and seeing the changes, not only in personnel, but especially in passengers.
Well, I remember us, you know, talking on layovers. We'd be sitting there in Bangor, Maine, eating lobsters and saying, boy, these are the good old days. And it turns out they were. Things changed. But like I said, I was fortunate. A lot of people didn't get to finish out their career in their airline. They got furloughed. The airline went bankrupt, on and on. And I got to go all the way. But anyhow,
Yeah, which is great. I had a girlfriend who was a Pan Am flight attendant, and she went with Delta, you know, when they took some of those people. But, of course, the first thing they did was they cut her seniority in half. And it was better not flying. But, you know, to be on a carrier that's eating rather than being eaten makes it a truly great career. But I know you've written a book about this. And, in fact, again, people can just easily go to Amazon.com and look up Mike Trahan as an author, and you'll see them. But I don't know if you want to discuss it, but what was wrong? You said parting became somewhat bitter after the fact.
With Delta?
Yeah.
Well, Delta went bankrupt after I retired.
Yep, 2005. And, I remember that.
Yes, it was. It's 2005. And what they had to do, I guess, part of their retirement deal was to throw our pilot retirement plans over to the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Because they couldn't handle the commitment. And it affected a lot of retirements worse than mine, but it affected mine, too. And excuse me. That kind of made me a little upset, but Delta had been good to me the whole time. In fact, they should have furloughed me the first year, you know, when they had nothing for me to do, and they kept me on. So I made my peace with that. I got nothing bad to say about Delta Airlines. I love the company.
I would agree with that, but also I think that there's a certain hell for people who play with pension funds, and I don't care what the industry is, because these are people like yourself, 30 years of your life, and you're expecting at the end this pension. I don't think anybody has the right to wipe that away. Now, thank God you didn't lose it entirely, as in some carrier cases or some of these things. I remember when United became Allegis, I said it stood for another legal loophole. Employees get instantly screwed. And in fact, they did. But that's for another day, I'm sure. But the fact that, you know, you survived that intact emotionally is, like I say, there's a special hell. No one should be fooling with pensions. But
Well, we're doing fine. We're doing okay. I've been retired 18 years already. It's hard to believe. Yeah.
It is hard to believe. And what a life well lived. Well, I'm not done with questions, and I'm talking to Captain Trahan, and this is WGN Radio. It's Tony Clark. It's the flip side of The Entertainer, This Heart of Mine, Chess, 1965. I'm Raleigh James in 4G on WGN Radio, and we are talking to Captain Trahan, who is, as far as I'm concerned, an utter hero. And I'm so glad to hear that at some point people started to recognize exactly what you did in the Spooky and all of your Vietnam experience. But I got to tell you, as a passenger on planes, I always felt better when I knew that the captain had been either through Vietnam or World War II, because I figured anything that went wrong, this was going to be minor compared to the experience that they had in the service. And, you know, I eventually stopped flying. I said, you know, they're cattle. I'm not getting on these things anymore. 1999, I said, I'm done. But, you know, from the I'm a member of the Stratoliner Club, you'll have to know. But anyway, so I go way back. And yeah, it was always more comforting when it was a military pilot. And I would assume that with all the folks you worked with, you probably can confirm that cool under pressure was something the military taught you.
Oh, yeah. That definitely was the one trait, was how to deal with the unexpected. Raleigh, you mentioned you're happy when they were military pilots when you got on an airplane. I had a lady on my flight one day that had a different criteria. She stuck her head in the cockpit and she said, "Oh, good, you're bald headed." I said, Well, I said, well, I'm glad you're thrilled about it. I'm not too thrilled.
Right.
Why is that good? She said, because you got experience. I said, well, yeah. I was a pilot 25 years before I ever made captain on the airline. So, yeah, I've got experience.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this. I've flown with both military and civilian pilots. And the airlines train people up so well that you can't tell the difference after a few years flying with them. That whether they were military or civilian, they're good pilots. I was lucky. I flew with some of the best in the world.
That is great to hear. And, you know, of course, when you got in 1970 and you're talking about the Convair 880, which, of course, is a General Dynamics plane, or even talking about the DC-9s or the 72s,
right.
That's a lot different from some of today's craft. Like, I've never been crazy about fly-by-wire. I don't know how you feel about the Airbuses, but they always kind of gave me the willies. Had you ever flown any of those?
No, I didn't fly the Airbus, but I did fly the 757 and 767 series aircraft. They were magnificent airplanes. And, you know, I was almost a dinosaur, too late to, you know, get caught up with the technology, but I was able to handle it. And I actually taught pilots on that airplane for about 7 years over in Atlanta in the training department, the 757, 767.
Yeah.
So, they're magnificent airplanes, but there's a problem today. Pilots are not getting enough hands-on flying. There's too much magic in the cockpit. That's what I think.
Yeah. I'm with you there. Yeah. I mean that's fine to rely on technology, but I'd like to know that the guy's actually landing it himself. But
they can do that. Yeah. Well, I want to ask you something. Apparently you know about my books, but have you had a chance to see any of them or look at them at all?
You know, I haven't, and I want to. Visually, I can't do the Kindles and stuff, so I always have to get and then print out so I can read it. And I wish you had some. Now, I didn't look to see, but it didn't appear on Amazon like I could order hard copies, can I?
No, they're paperback.
No, paperback's fine as long as I can get paper rather than a Kindle.
Yeah, I'm gonna. Is there a way for me to give your screener or whatever my email address? You can send me an email, and I'm going to send you a complimentary set of my books for this.
Oh, I would love that.
For this interview, I appreciate. Yeah, I'd like to do that for you.
I'd adore that.
Appreciate the opportunity. I really appreciate the opportunity to perpetuate the spooky part of it. The fact that we've got a group of guys, some gunners. Can I tell you a quick story? Do we have a couple more minutes?
We've got a minute.
Okay, it's too late.
well, then here's what we can do. Well, here's what we can do. We've got tomorrow, so I'll have you talk to producer Ben because I want to hear it, and we'll bring it back on for more stories. And I also bet you're quite familiar with the EAA, so we can talk about that as well. So hang on.
I'd love to do that.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I'll give you Ben, and he'll book it. Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. Thank you. And
I'll give you my contact information for you.
Okay.
All right. We'll get you a set of books.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, Ben, we'll pick this up, and then I'll talk to you again tomorrow. All right.
Thank you very much.
That'll be great. And I love talking about these kind of things.